We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also happy to have back here on the program once again Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. We do these programs on home maintenance once a month, have been doing that for a long time, so that you'll have the chance to call in and ask questions. And we can take basic stuff about just about anything, heating and cooling, doors, windows, insulation, attics, basements, gutter issues, roof, whatever. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Also now you may email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu, and there it can help us if you try to make them brief. But if you want to do it that way, you certainly can do it. Or if you just want to call, you can do that too. Hey, thanks very much for being here.
Good morning, David. Thanks for having me on.
We have someone ready to go already, so we'll get right to them. In Urbana, line one, right here. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Scott, I have some questions about working on an older home, a 90-year-old house that has asbestos siding, and the roofing material is asbestos, too. They appear to be in fairly good shape, and what we'd like to do is, you know, paint the house. But it is very dirty. It needs to be cleaned. So my questions are, is it dangerous to, like, power wash the asbestos material?
Well, it's kind of a gray area what to do with asbestos these days. I mean, if you went by EPA guidelines, yeah, there's all sorts of things we need to do specifically. However, for the most part, a good washing, I don't know that I'd get real close with a high-pressure washer. Asbestos is a problem because of the fiber.
Mm-hmm.
The asbestos siding and asbestos shingles are actually a concrete product that they use the asbestos fiber for a strength so that they can make the panels quite thin.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the asbestos is encased in the concrete, it's almost impossible for you to inhale it, so therefore it would be difficult for it to get it stuck in your lung. And then your lung, if it couldn't manage to get the fiber out, creates a scar tissue around it and reduces lung capacity. So it's very difficult to inhale concrete asbestos.
Mm-hmm.
The problem we run into, of course, is when we do removable, when we're actually breaking panels or crushing panels and we get a lot of dust in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not too bad. You can usually wash it down, and they do make some paints. You want to use an Alka Grip type paint or a paint designed for the asbestos.
Alpha or Alka?
Alka.
Alka.
Oh, it's an alkaline paint.
Okay.
A regular latex or oil paint can, a latex will work, but an oil base tends to mix with the fibers and the bonding agents and make almost a soap.
Okay.
So that the paint doesn't dry well and doesn't adhere well.
Okay.
So they do make special paints for the asbestos siding.
Oh, all right. That's good to know. And we want to eventually replace the wiring and the plumbing. And so that means we'll probably, be up in the attic and, of course, underneath. And I was just wondering how dangerous would that be? Or, again, as long as we don't break anything or drill into anything, we'd be okay to...
Yeah, there again, the asbestos is encased in the concrete, so you have very little asbestos dust flying around or asbestos exposure.
Mm-hmm.
The information that I've gotten on asbestos has indicated there's basically three different materials that they've linked and labeled as asbestos.
Mm-hmm.
What the type you've got would be the chrysotile or white asbestos.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I can tell, there's no real direct link as a carcinogen relative to the blue and the brown that was used more in the industrial shipbuilding, furnace building, things like that, major
okay.
buildings.
Okay.
So the white is, in my opinion, a little bit safer. And as long as you're not grinding it up and snorting it.
So if we just took regular precautions, like you said, keep our distance, maybe wear a mask.
Well, when you're using water, of course, there is a little or no dust because it does take the dust out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be working around it, sanding it is not a good idea.
Right.
Scrubbing it down with a brush is fine. A simple mask would help reduce some of the fibers that you inhale. Mm-hmm. What people don't realize is there's still an awful lot of asbestos in use in things like commercial vehicle brakes. Mm-hmm. So standing on a street corner with lots of trucks going by, you probably get as much asbestos as you're going to get by even removing the siding on your house.
Oh.
So it's one of those things where I will not say asbestos is not a problem, but I think the problem has been grossly overinflated for residential.
When I went on the internet, yeah, it really frightened me, and I thought I'm going to ask somebody.
Well, yeah, if you're directly inhaling it, yes, it is an issue. If you're working with it on a daily basis, yes, it's an issue.
Okay.
In residential use, some very basic care, and I think you're all right.
Okay, thank you a lot.
All right, very good. Thank you. Let's continue. And the next person in line here, somebody in Champaign. Line number two. Yes, hello.
Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have a question. We've been in our house for 30 years, and when it was built, I think, in 56. When we moved in, it has a hot water heater, A.O. Smith, and it's the original hot water heater. So it's now, I guess, over 50 years old, and it works fine. But I start thinking, should we replace it? Would it be more energy efficient? On the other hand, I've never heard anybody having a hot water heater that lasted so long.
Actually, in Champaign-Urbana, it's not that uncommon. The first question I would have is, where is it located?
The garage.
Okay. If it's in the garage, then I would probably put a insulating blanket around it to help the energy efficiency. Most of the newer water heaters have more insulation around the outside housing. So therefore, they tend to keep the heat contained a little bit better. When it's in a garage and exposed to different temperature changes, particularly when it's this time of year, yes, you can lose a little bit of energy by not having as much insulation. They do make specific blankets that go around your water heater for applications like that. So you could get a water heater blanket. And it's a fiberglass blanket with a plastic coating, and it's cut and fit and designed to go around the water heater. Make sure you keep it away from the flue area so that we get lots of air up at the draft diverter. And, of course, you want to cut it and leave it open around the combustion air side, which is down around the opening, the cover at the bottom.
Okay.
As long as the water heater is not gurgling, banging, boiling inside, you're in pretty good shape as far as the efficiency to heat the water. Where the only advantage we're going to need right now would be the extra insulation around the outside that a newer unit would have.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. And the reason you said in Champaign-Urbana that they last a long time has to do with the fact that the water, the mineral content of the water is actually pretty low.
Yes, our water content, our water quality here in Champaign-Urbana is some of the best in the country. They actually over-soften it and then re-harden it for maximum pipe life, and they've got a really good quality water. A lot of times our water out of the tap is better than water you can get in a bottle, or as good as water you can get in a bottle. So we have very good water here, very few contaminants. The biggest problem we have with water heaters is a lime or sediment buildup in the bottom of the tank. If we get some material built up in the bottom of the tank, we've got a flame burning under the tank to warm it up. If the water that is heated cannot rise up or circulate through the tank, it sits in the sediment, it actually gets hot enough to where it'll boil. When it boils, we get basically a percolation. We get an air bubble or steam bubble going up through the tank, which will then collapse as it cools down. And it sounds like somebody's inside the water heater banging around or making some gurgling noises. Well, it takes a lot more BTUs of energy to boil water than it does to actually heat it. And since we're really not taking it up to 212 degrees, it would be a waste of energy if we had this sediment that was creating this boiling effect. But as long as the bottom of the tank is relatively clean and we don't have any contaminants in there or any, I don't want to say contaminants, more sediment than anything else, mm-hmm. a little bit of sand. One of the final filters of our water system here is a sand filter. So it is occasionally we do get some sand, particularly if there's been fire hydrants opened in the area where we get sudden rushes. We can get a little bit of that sand pulled through. But for the most part, water heaters around here, I don't find many of them need replaced. For a while there, a lot of the rural countries, cities, the rural areas we have here, Sydney for one, had their own water system that was not as good, and a water heater there would last maybe 7 to 10 years. But I know the one in my house right now is a little pushing 35 years. So here locally, they work pretty well.
All right. Other questions, welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. You may also email to will-talk@illinois.edu. The guest this morning is Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service, and this is our monthly program on home care. Next up, we'll talk with someone in St. Joe. Line 3. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. My dilemma is I've got window condensation on my windows when it gets, or moisture condensation on my windows when it gets real cold. I had Scott come out a couple years ago, and he inspected my house, and he didn't see any big problems. He told me to put some timers on my my fans in the bathroom, and I did that, but I'm still getting condensation. And I had a door going out my kitchen. It had condensation as well, and I put a storm door in there, and that took care of it. So I wanted to ask Scott if that would hurt my Anderson double pane windows to put some storm windows on the outside.
Well, putting storm windows on will reduce the heat loss through the window, so the window will be a little bit warmer, therefore less likely to condense the moisture. But moisture condensation on the windows is not a problem with the window. It's a problem with excess humidity in the house. A good double-glazed window should not get condensation on it unless you have excessively high humidity levels in the house. So what we really need to look for is a source of moisture. Where is the water coming from? Why do we have that much humidity in the house? Do you have a hygrometer around that will tell you or give you an indication of just what the humidity level is in the house?
Well, I've got the probably the cheaper models. It usually says, I can't get my humidity level. I have a basement, and it usually says around 50 or 55%, and I run dehumidifiers down there. And when it was real cold, the one upstairs said 40% when the temperatures were getting down close to zero.
Well, that'll give you moisture condensation on your windows.
Yeah,
I believe for the weather we were having, somewhere in the 25 to 28% range would be more what I would expect. You get up above about 30 or 35, and, yeah, you're going to have some condensation. So what we really need to do is try and track down what is our moisture source. The house should not naturally be that damp or that humid. The tighter we build the houses, of course, the less moisture goes out of it. So the newer houses do have more of an issue. But still, there's something putting humidity into the house. We got to try and figure out where that moisture is. It may be something silly like we've got a water heater that's not drafting properly, so some of the flue gases are coming in. Or it could be the vent fan for the range doesn't vent outside and we do a lot of steam-type cooking.
Mm-hmm.
The timers on the showers is one thing that I like to recommend because particularly for a house that has a high humidity level, get that vented out. We need to make sure that they are actually vented to the outside and not just up into the insulation.
Uh-huh.
But something, you know, if you've got 50% when it's zero outside, there's not a lot you're going to do to not have condensation. And by putting a storm window on it, you won't get it on the window, but you're going to get it in another cool area in the house. My guess is you probably had a layer of frost on the bottom of the roof sheathing in the attic as well as the moisture.
Well, you went up there before and you said that was fine.
Okay. Well, that means we got good ventilation up there. Of course, my guess is we still probably had a little bit, but I've had three calls here in the last 2 weeks about ice melting in attic areas because of high humidity in this cold snap where we stay around 10 degrees for a couple of days. We may have to do some more research on where that water's coming from or where that humidity is coming from because there's got to be some way that humidity is getting into the house.
Okay.
When it's zero outside, there's almost no humidity outdoors.
Right. If I did put the storm windows on, would it hurt?
The storm windows won't hurt the windows at all. It would give you a triple glazing. What it does is give you an extra air barrier so that you have less heat loss through the windows. The less heat loss we have through the windows, the warmer they are. The warmer they are, the less likely they are to condense the moisture. The moisture, once it's evaporated, water becomes a water vapor. Water vapor moves by vapor pressure and will try and equalize throughout the entire house. So if you've got high humidity anywhere in the house, you have high humidity everywhere in the house. So by putting a storm window on it, yes, we can reduce the chances of condensation on the windows, but it still means that we've got this excess humidity in the house, and it's just going to start condensing someplace else, inside a wall or inside an attic, someplace where you can't see it as well. So,
how about an air-to-air heat exchanger? Would that benefit me?
Well, that can be a solution as far as exchanging air for the house, bringing in the drier air from outdoors when it is cold. I would be more interested in knowing why we've got this high humidity in the house, locating the moisture source. Rather than working on the symptoms, which would be the condensation, let's work for trying to find the problem, which is whatever it is putting the high humidity in the house.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. We'll keep going here. Next caller is in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I have another question about an old house. It's an old, plaster and lath, two-story with a basement, and we've rewired the house, and there's a room, it's the dining room, and right above it is a bedroom, and since the ceiling is open right now in the dining room, because we went and chased down all that that tube wiring and took it out, we want to make it quieter for the person up in the bedroom right above the dining room. Is there a way to insulate in that space above the ceiling and below the floor of the bedroom?
Yeah, an insulation will help to a certain extent. They do make some sound deadeners, which are more of a heavier mat rather than a real thick mat, and being lightweight like insulation, it's more of a heavy weight to help reduce sound transmission. Quite often used for automobiles for these high-end stereo installations and such. But yes, some insulation or a sound mat could be installed up in the rafters before you put the ceiling back up there, and that would reduce the sound transfer between the rooms.
Yeah, because we're going to put a drywall up, you know.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so before we do that, we could find some sound that. Where would I look for that?
Well, since you're putting a drywall up, you could probably put in a foam board, a dense foam board, like an extruded board, more commonly called a pink board or a blue board. That would give some sound deadening. But like I say, they do sell actually sound deadening mat. Can't say it's terribly inexpensive. It's a little denser than like a foil or something. It's got a pretty heavy weight to it. It usually has like tar or a real heavy woven mat, something that will deaden the sound waves.
Yeah. With tar in it, would that have an odor to it?
No, it doesn't. No, it's all sealed. It's sealed in between a couple of different pieces of paper, and so you never see it or feel it or smell it.
Oh, okay. So what would we do, nail that or glue it?
Depending on what you're using, styrofoam or... most sound deadeners you can usually either nail or staple in place.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. And next, we'll talk with someone on our line number two, somebody in Mahomet. Hello.
Hello. Two questions. Number one, what is the recommended slope and type of fill earth? And should there be plastic lining and so on to keep water from in heavy rain times? To come out from under the basement walls and through cracks from the basement floor. In other words, keep it away from the house. Question number two is older home, heating ducts that are wrapped with asbestos tape and are fraying. Some of it is falling to the crawl space, and you can see the little fibers there. What can be done about that?
Okay, well, I'll start with the first one. Grading around the outside, basically we want a slope away from the outside of the house. I believe the recommendations in the BOCA codes are from the bottom of the wood framing in the house, which is generally the bottom of the siding, to the soil level, we should have anywhere from 4 to 8 inches of foundation exposed. That way we keep the soil well away from any of the wood framing in the house. From that point on the house to a point 10 feet out in the yard is supposed to have 6 to 8 inches of drop or slope. So basically, we're supposed to have this 6 or 8 inch hill all the way around the house so the water will drain away.
Okay, now, no plastic sheeting underneath it?
We don't need the plastic sheeting unless we're going to do something like put in a gravel landscape bed or a bark or something like that. In areas where the yard or the house on the lot does not allow for this 8 inches of slope, I have recommended that in the first 3 feet or so around the foundation that you do put a plastic liner down. Still have some type of slope on the soil next to the foundation, but put the plastic down underneath a bark or underneath a gravel so that the water cannot soak down in the first 3 feet around the house.
Okay, any chosen kind of earth better than some other kind, earth fill?
Basically, anything that will compact. You don't want to use sandy type soils. You know, the clay we've got around here, or some good black dirt. Either one will compact very quickly with time. Obviously, sand and gravel water just goes through; it doesn't actually run off. So those will strain the water, but won't necessarily redirect the water.
So 6 to 8 inches, 10 feet.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. All right. Question number two. Yes, it is fairly common for older ductwork to have some type of asbestos tape or asbestos sheeting. It was used for sealing joints. It was used for insulation and fire protection on some of the older furnaces. Probably the best thing to do with it is to encapsulate it, which sounds like a real fancy term for wrapping it with duct tape. You can put duct tape on it. You can brush a coat of paint on it, something to seal the fibers so that they're not likely to become airborne. When working with it in a crawl space area, it would be a good idea to have some type of respiratory mask. Usually even the little inexpensive white paper units will work fine because the fibers are small, but they're not so small they're going to try and go through the mask.
Any concern about the fibers that have already fallen that are on the earth floor?
Well, hopefully in the crawl space, we've got a piece of plastic down over the top of the earth floor anyway. You should never have an exposed soil surface in a crawl space. We end up with too much moisture condensation in the house, too much moisture evaporation. So there should be a layer of plastic. But the amount of dust that's going to be in there is going to be minimal. Unless you were spending large quantities of time in the crawl space, I don't think it should be an issue.
Okay. Well, if there is no plastic, should it be appropriate to put the plastic down and cover whatever is there in fibers?
Yes, yes.
And,
if you do not have a vapor barrier on the crawl space surface, then I would highly recommend putting one in. Obviously, if you're going to do some work in the crawl space, such as trying to encapsulate your existing asbestos, I would put the plastic in afterwards so we don't damage the plastic. The plastic vapor barrier really is quite simple. Basically, you just unroll a sheet of visqueen over the soil surface. You lap it up the foundation walls a couple of inches. In places where we have joints, you overlap the pieces of plastic 4 or 5 inches. You don't ballast it. You don't put gravel on top of it. You don't hold it down with rocks. If there was ever any flooding in the crawl space, you want the plastic to be able to float on top of the water, so we don't want anything heavy on top of the plastic.
Got it.
It's really quite easy to put in. Usually you can buy the visqueen in different widths. You know, 100-foot roll 14 feet wide or 100-foot roll 20 feet wide. You just kind of roll it out from one end to the other, cut it with a box knife, and unfold it from the roll, and it's pretty much in place.
Black or clear?
If you have any windows, those areas should have a black or dark plastic because it has a UV protectant. Most crawl spaces have little or no sunlight getting down there, so the clear plastic works well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Well,
thank you. Good. And to another caller here. This is someone in Champaign, and it's line 3. Hello.
Yes. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
I have a question concerning ice buildup. I noticed a couple locations on the backside of my house, this one-story house, that had icicles coming down from it. And I was just wondering if that's due to a lack of insulation up in the attic at those particular isolated places.
Well, ice coming down, well, that's kind of a general thing. There could be several different items that could create a problem. Is this ice coming out of the soffits or ice running down siding?
It's just like icicles hanging over the gutter area.
Okay, then that's probably more... we have some heat loss in the area, and so that the heat from the house is melting the snow rapidly. And with this extreme cold that we had the last couple of weeks, as it gets out to the soffit area, it refreezes very quickly. So it's very conducive to icicles or ice damming even.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it probably means that there's some areas you could use a little bit more insulation. In some cases, it means you could use a little bit more ventilation to help keep the attic from getting too warm.
Now, with the current attic, there's blown-in insulation, probably about 10 inches. Would it be beneficial to put some rolled fiberglass over the top of that, or would that be Overkill.
Actually, with 10 inches insulation, you're probably pretty close to where you need to be. Ideally, for new construction, we're shooting for 15 to 16 or 15 to 18 inches. But once you start getting a layer 10 inches thick, your return on investment starts diminishing rapidly. We don't, you know, putting another 10 inches over the top of 10 inches doesn't save you the same amount of heat loss.
Right.
Insulation is calculated by R value, which is an inverse proportion to heat loss. So if I have an R19, which is a 6-inch bat, versus an R38, which would be an 8-inch bat, actually a 9-inch bat. We're only saving about 1/38 of the heat loss that we were losing with the R19 because of the inverse proportion to heat loss.
Okay.
So if you've already got 10 inches, I would look for any place where we might have the bathroom fan blowing up against the sheathing. It could be where we've got the kitchen vent goes right by that particular rafter, and we're holding a little heat from there.
Mm-hmm.
Any open chases around any plumbing vents or anything that might be allowing air from the basement or crawl space up to the attic area.
Okay.
Something will be melting that snow off of there.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
All right.
It.
Well, we're just a little bit past our midpoint here of this hour of Focus 580. Scott Spies is the guest. He works as an inspector with the Spies Home Inspection Service. And once a month on a Monday, he's here and we talk about home maintenance. If you have questions, the kind of things we've been talking about, it could be slightly different as long as we're talking about various pieces and parts of the single family house. You give us a call and he'll see if he can help you out. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, we're a little quiet here. I was thinking of just for a minute going back to the one of the first questions we had from the caller who said he was having problems with condensation on the windows. And you mentioned a couple of things. You talked about the importance of ventilation in bathrooms where there's high humidity from people showering and so forth. You talked about the fact that it's important to make sure that your water heater, if you have a gas water heater, that it's venting properly. What might be some of the other sources of humidity?
Well, I was quite actually expecting to find condensation questions today on the program because of the cold weather and the number of calls that I've had in the last 2 weeks at the business because of the condensation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are several sources of high humidity for a house. Most common one is a crawl space without a proper vapor barrier, mm-hmm. where water is evaporating up out of the ground. The most scary one I believe I would classify would be a cracked heat exchanger, which is letting some of the combustion gases from a furnace back into a house. So a heat exchanger can not only be putting in carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide back in the house, but could also be putting in a water vapor. Anytime we burn gas, we do end up with a water vapor along with the other byproducts. So those are things to look for. Here lately, I found a sump pump that had a broken line, and so that it was spraying water up to the bottom of the floor and into the return duct for the furnace, and the furnace was pulling the moisture and putting it back through the house. I found a power humidifier that the valve was stuck wide open, and so even though shut off, disconnected, and the plug pulled, it was still putting moisture into the house. I found a kitchen vent fan that was merely blowing into a wall, and so we had a wall that had a lot of warm, humid air, and it happened to be an outside wall, so we're starting to get some mold and mildew growing on it. Any number of different places where that moisture can start. Our caller had indicated that I'd come out before and recommended a few things. So, yeah, that was one that's got my curiosity piqued as to what we might have. Being a newer house, I've got a little bit of a suspicion that somebody put a power humidifier on the furnace that is not operating properly and though even turned off, maybe putting some water back in the house. So that's one of the things that I would check would be to disconnect a water line. Actually, I actually had one where I turned off the water line, unplugged the humidifier, and still had a moisture pump and found that the water valve wasn't shutting all the way off at the source, was not shutting all the way off in the unit, and it took actually cutting and soldering the line shut to the power humidifier to correct the moisture problem. So it's if you've got condensation on the windows, if it's a single glazed window, you're going to get condensation on it when it gets down to zero. If it's a double pane window, the house should not have enough humidity to create that condensation or even ice on the inside of the windows. Occasionally we'll get weather Illinois is famous for extreme temperature differences. Occasionally we'll get weather where one day it's 45 degrees and the next day it's 4.5 degrees. In those days, yes, we can get a little bit of humidity, but it should go away in a day or two. So if you've got more moisture on the windows for longer than that, we need to start finding out where that moisture issue is coming from.
Okay. Well, we have a couple of callers here, and we also got an email, so we'll try to get back to it and go back to the phones for the next caller, and that will be someone in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
We have a moisture problem in our bathroom. It seems to be mostly on one window. We do have double panes. And we were going to have somebody come in, and I think our fan doesn't work. And it's also vented to the attic. So I thought we'd have someone come in and put the fan in, vent it outside. I'm thinking of the cost involved. Would it be cheaper, and would it be as effective to have one of those fans that, like, go on the wall that vent to the outside?
Not necessarily any cheaper. They're actually usually the ones that go on the wall. You have to do more modification to the siding, and you end up raising the labor rate trying to get the siding to look right around it. We're usually going up into an attic and venting it out to a soffit vent or something is fairly easy. The other disadvantage to running it straight to a wall is that you end up with occasionally wind blowing back from the vent, the outside blowing into the bathroom and creating a cold bathroom, which of course is never fun. Never fun to go in there with bare feet and have cold floors.
Sure.
So having it go up into the attic where we can have a little bit of duct put on the fan, which will act as kind of an isolator between the outside air and the bathroom air.
Now, we'll have to put like a hole in the roof to do that. That's still not a whole bunch of major work.
Well, you don't necessarily need to put a hole in the roof. Oftentimes they can get it to the soffit area, which is already ventilated to the outside. Occasionally you can run a little bit farther distance and run it to a gable end. But going in through a roof is actually fairly simple to do. It's just a matter of getting the proper flashing in. I would say, yes, it's still easier to go through the roof than it is to go through the siding, depending on the type of siding that you've got.
Okay, and can I ask you one other question here?
Sure.
Do you do the work yourself or contract it out yourself?
No, I don't, because generally speaking, I would consider that to be a conflict of interest, and it would be hard for me to give a free opinion if I were actually able to make a profit off of finding something or by profiting by some of the recommendations I make. So, no,
sure.
I don't do any of the repair work.
If I were to call your office, could you give a recommendation for someone?
Well, is it local in Champaign-Urbana?
Yes, in Champaign.
Okay. There are several contractors in town that could do something like that. I usually like to try and find the ones that have a real reasonable reputation. So you might check with friends that have had work done, or to be quite honest, the realtors in town usually have the best handymen because they're always trying to get things done quickly for house sales. So if you got somebody that's in the real estate business, they probably have a name.
Okay.
You can always call, and we've got a few on file that we've used. It changes from time to time, but we've got a few people that we do recommend.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let's go on to somebody who is in Plano. That's next. Line four. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. I don't know if you went over this or not, but I keep having problems with my heating system. What it comes down to is trying to fool around with the butterfly valves that are inside the ducting work itself. It seems to me when I've basically turned all the ones off in the house except for the two rooms I want to use because it was getting way too hot upstairs and nothing was happening downstairs. Now, what's happened now is it seems like it's not the downstairs for some reason has been staying cooler than the upstairs no matter what I do. I've got fans in there and I've got them going. I've got circulating deals in there, and it doesn't seem to make that much difference one way or the other. That plus I keep getting – and I've got my humidifier down all the way, and I'm still getting a lot of this frost stuff. I was wondering, give me an idea what that might be or what I might be able to do.
Okay, well, again, if you've got some frost on the windows, where is the moisture coming from? If it's the dehumidifier or the power humidifier is turned off, then it may be someplace else in the house. You're saying that upstairs is several degrees warmer than downstairs. Is this a real open-type design, or is there a stairway?
No, I don't have a big foyer. It's a narrow hallway, but the bedroom, the master bedroom, and a lot of the extra side rooms, the other two rooms are the same way. My office room, which is upstairs, is basically, it doesn't get a lot of heat. There's only one duct going in there. It's a pretty good sized room. It's just the way the house was put together. It was very, to me, I think it was poorly made as far as ducting. I've just got so much heat loss going in between the baths of the 2x4s. It's ridiculous. I've duct taped a lot of the, not duct tape, but that aluminum plumber's tape I used, a lot of the seams. It just seems like when they put these houses together, they never really seal the duct seams, and I've been getting a lot of heat loss from that.
Okay, well, but if you've got heat loss from your ductwork that's in the basement, then that heat is still in the house, so it still warms the house. The ductwork is more to distribute it evenly, and I will have to admit there is kind of an art to getting the heating system to heat evenly from one end of the house to the other, or top to bottom, depending on the size of the plenum. They need to keep velocity up, so after you take a couple of ducts off the main plenum, you have to reduce it down in size to keep the air moving through it. Closing down too many of the vents can create as much problem as it helps, because the furnace is actually designed to move X amount of air through it to reach its efficiency potential. And if you start reducing the number of holes it has to blow the air out, then it doesn't move the air through the heat exchanger as well. So you end up with hotter air coming out, but you also end up with hotter flu temperatures, so you're wasting more of your energy. A lot of times you need to move large volumes of air to make the heat exchanger efficient. So shutting down too many of the rooms is not usually a good idea. Dampering them down to where they're not getting as much air is a good way of balancing the heating and cooling system. But shutting them down completely, particularly if you shut down more than about 30% of the ducts, you've now probably compromised the efficiency of the furnace because it's not able to move as much air past the heat exchanger as what it was intended to. And that can create extreme temperature differences, because the rooms that are getting the air, it's going to be a very hot air because we're not moving enough air to cool the heat exchanger.
All right, well.
So we'll have to – that's one of those things where it's going to take a little bit of experimentation to figure out what's going on. But any heat loss, I will have to admit this. A lot of the ductwork is put together pretty loose. If it's in a crawl space, it's a good idea to try and tape around it. But if it's in a basement area, it's not as critical because that hot air does eventually work its way up. Now, we did have some contractors there for a while that were putting the heat ducts for the upper level were going up through the outside walls. And that doesn't work well because it doesn't allow you any room for insulation in those outside walls. And as the heat duct goes up through 8 or 10 feet of wall surface, it's cooling off because of the lack of insulation in there. And so by the time it gets to the second floor, it was blowing out cool air or very little warmth to it and creating some issues. So some houses work better than others, and it's mostly the layout of the ductwork, and sometimes you have to redesign it.
Yeah. I'm going to get my email question here. We have an email from someone who's listening in Urbana, and he says that his home in Urbana has an uninsulated crawl space. He says the furnace is down there, all the ductwork and the water pipes, and there is nothing, he says, that is insulated. So here's his question. Should the floor, the ductwork, the pipes, or the perimeter wall be insulated?
My personal preference would be the perimeter wall. It's amazing how much heat loss we can lose out through the foundation wall. The foundation wall below grade usually will stay in the 50 to 55 degree range. Then there's usually 8 to 10 inches that are above the grade area, and that portion of the foundation can be exposed to outdoor temperatures. So we're talking 0 or 10 degrees, and we can get a lot of heat loss through there. It's amazing in the springtime when I can walk up to a house and I can tell whether or not the crawl space is insulated by how tall the flowers are next to the house versus the ones that are 3 feet away from the house, because the heat from the house has actually warmed the soil next to the foundation and the plants start to grow faster. And so they're taller next to the foundation. So it's amazing how much heat loss you can get through your foundation walls. So my personal preference would be to insulate the perimeter walls. And then any heat loss from the furnace, any heat loss from the ductwork would help, would be trapped in the crawl space, would rise up as heat normally does, and actually warm the floors. So your floors will be warmer if you have the perimeter walls insulated. Now, this does not work well with an electric heat system where heat is in the ceiling. So there are times when insulation should be put in the floors, but the situation described, I would say perimeter insulation would be ideal. It keeps the crawl space relatively warm. A crawl space will try and stay in the 55-degree range year-round if it does not have any exterior heat loss. The soil underneath the house, it is naturally in that 55-degree range. So as long as we're not radiating heat towards a cold foundation, very few crawl spaces I get in are actually cold. I get in an awful lot of attics where there's either frost or you can see your breath going through it. But crawl spaces are pretty much all going to be 55 degrees unless somebody's got a lot of vents opened up or we don't have much insulation and we've got a really cold day. So I personally prefer doing crawl spaces over attics because they are almost always 55 degrees and much more comfortable than an attic, which can be anywhere from 155 degrees down to zero.
All right. Hope that helps. And I'm sure that you didn't ask about this, but I'm sure that you would say, and if you don't have plastic down, put your plastic down there.
That's true, a vapor barrier. Now, he did have an interesting point there. The furnace is in the crawl space. Depending on how old the furnace is, we may not be able to seal the crawl space up too tight because it is pulling some of the combustion air from there. Usually if a furnace is in a crawl space, we don't want everything completely sealed up because it's got to be able to get some air. But also, if usually, not all the time, but usually when we have a furnace in a crawl space, there's an access that, from a garage or something like that, that we could leave a crack to, for this combustion air to get into. Crawl space is a pretty big area, so it's not like we have to put a large hole in it to get more air in, because even when the furnace is running, it can't suck a vacuum on the crawl space. But yeah, you don't want to make the crawl space airtight with a furnace down in the crawl space.
All right. We have maybe about 10, 12 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. It's our monthly home maintenance show. Questions welcome. We have several ready to go. So we'll get back to the phones. And the next person is Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the humidity levels and comfort in the house. I'm new to the area, and I came from Georgia, where dry air is not a problem. And so I'm trying to deal with the house here these last couple of weeks when it got so cold. I remember a previous program, I think, where you said a house is happy to be dry. But then another time, and I think it was you that said some humidity can help the heat load and the comfort of the house. And then lastly, I have wooden instruments, and so I've been desperately trying to keep the humidity in the house above 30%. And so I was surprised when you mentioned that when the temperature gets so cold that 25 to 28% humidity wouldn't be surprising. And so I've actually been simmering water on the stove and to bring the humidity in the house up, and I've gotten a bit of condensation on windows in the kitchen. But overall, I mean, it did help the comfort of the house. And so I'm just kind of wondering, what are my goals? When it gets that cold, what should I be trying to do in the house?
Okay, well, you've got a couple of factors there. First of all, if you're boiling water or simmering water on the range and you're only getting one of the windows near that with condensation, you have a lot of air leakage. The house is drying out. A newer, tighter house has very little air movement through it, whereas an older, less insulated house with older windows has a lot of air moving through it. The old farmhouses, yeah, the whole time, all winter long, you'd put pots and pans of water on top of radiators trying to keep humidity up because they've got 25 or 30 air exchanges in a 24-hour period. All the air just gets up and leaves.
This is my Midwestern mother-in-law's suggestion. And this is a this is definitely a leaky house. I know that much
and
already.
And the more air leaks you have, the drier the house is going to be because you're getting more outside air. When it's zero outside, all the moisture that's in the air froze and fell out. So it is quite dry outside. Generally speaking, when we're trying to put humidity in the house, it's a relative humidity. Relative to what? Relative to outdoor humidity. If the outdoor humidity level is very low, it does not take a lot to make the house relatively high compared to outdoors. So it actually takes less humidity in cold weather to be relatively high in humidity than it would when it's, say, 30 degrees outside or 40 degrees outside and the outside humidity levels are in the 25% range or 30% range. Then in order to be relatively high in the house, you can be at 40 or 45. But when it's as cold as it has been and there's almost no humidity outdoors, it doesn't take much indoors to bring it up. Now, the other thing you brought up was wooden instruments. And, of course, anytime you have expensive wood furniture or instruments, they don't like to have a lot of swing in the humidity.
Mm-hmm.
You get them wet, they tend to swell. You get them too dry, they tend to shrink. Obviously, if you can get them in one humidity level, that would be ideal. And as my program, as you indicated, I have said the drier would be better. And keeping the instrument dry throughout its life would be nice. It won't move. People are like, oh, well, it'll shrink and crack. Well, it'll shrink and crack, or it'll shrink up to a certain level, and that's where it'll stay. But if you get it wet and let it expand and then contract again, drying it out, then that's when we get our cracking or our movement. But yes, pianos, the soundboard, very sensitive to moisture. Mm. So you like to try and keep the house in that 25 or 30% humidity. We don't like to see it drop way down. So I would say at this point, you're doing a pretty good job of keeping the humidity level in the house. The ideal humidity for the house is probably going to be somewhere between the moisture condensation on double pane windows and the static shock between you and the cat or you and the light switch when you walk across the carpet. Managing that balance can be difficult, particularly when we have our big temperature swings, because when it drops down to zero, there's no moisture outside and everything dries out inside. And that's why we have I was a little surprised that we have as many people calling about the high humidity when it was that cold for that long.
Mm-hmm.
It tells me that there's additional moisture sources other than just outside moisture.
Okay, but a rule of thumb, get rid of the condensation, but if I start shocking my kid, I maybe add a little bit.
Yeah, if you've got static electricity in the house.
And ultimately fill the house up more.
Yeah, if you've got a low enough humidity in the house that you've got static electricity, then yes, we need to bring the humidity level back up. But if you get up in the morning and you see an inch or two of water at the bottom of the window, you've probably got a little too high. So somewhere in between there is your most accurate barometer.
Okay, fair enough. I can work with that.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's go on here. In line number one is our next caller in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
A few years ago, we had a high-efficiency condensing furnace put in, and so it's got the PVC pipe with the exhaust gases going outside, but it's still drawing its combustion air from inside. My question is, would it be worth the investment to have another pipe, PVC pipe, put in to draw the combustion air in from outside as well?
Well, it would raise the efficiency a little bit. It kind of depends on the individual situation. If the house is an extremely tight house, then, yeah, you'll probably see more of it than if the house has got a few air leaks. So it kind of depends on how well the house was built or how old it is. The newer ones, of course, with the house wrap and the extra insulation and the Visqueen behind the drywall, things like that, they could benefit from that. The other problem we run into is depending on where the furnace is located, you can actually reduce the efficiency of the induction fan if you get too many bends or elbows on your intake pipe. So a lot of times they'll just go ahead and take it from the furnace room. Most furnaces are rated for how much piping or how much restriction you can have on the inlet. And I think every 90-degree elbow is equivalent to 10 foot of straight run. So it's one of those deals where if it's near a wall where you can get the piping to it fairly easily, then it might be worth doing. But if it's someplace where you've got to run 20 feet to the other end of the house and you've got five or six 90-degree bends to get it there, chances are you're going to hurt the efficiency of the furnace more than you're going to help it.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
All right, very good. Well, we certainly have time for some other callers. If you'd like to call in here, talk with Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. Something I thought I might ask you about just fairly recently, I think we had some news stories from some people here in the state of Illinois that were concerned about radon. And they said something like, well, you know, we've convinced people now it's important to have smoke alarms and carbon monoxide detectors, so they're aware of those things. But they seem to be really pushing for the idea that it would be a good idea for people to have their house tested so that they wouldn't, you know one way or another whether it's a problem or not. And I know what you're going to say. About it generally, I guess my question would be, well, if somebody wants to do it, wants to know what the radon level is, and then they can go from there. If they want to know what the radon level is, what's the most reliable way to do it?
Okay. Yeah, you've heard my views on the radon before, and
yes.
There is no way that I can say radon is not a problem because there are issues with it. However, I do feel that the area we've got here, very few of the houses actually have a significant radon problem. You know, if we were out eastward, we had 200 and 300 readings rather than 2 to 6 that we get in this area. Yeah, I'd be more concerned about it. It's never a bad idea to check the radon level. But the radon is a colorless, odorless, invisible gas coming up out of the ground, effectively decomposing rock. It's everywhere. The mitigation process is to collect the gas and vent it outdoors and just blow it outside. So it's not like we're getting rid of it. It's not like we're filtering it. We're just putting it outside where it can dissipate. Mm. So the tighter you've got the house, if you've got an area, Muhammad has a rock quarry or two. There's more rock there. It's not a bad idea to test it. The easiest thing to do is to find a 2 to 3 month test. The reason I say 2 to 3 month is the EPA bases their level of concern, this 4 picocuries, on your yearly average. And to do a 2 or 3 day test may be accurate for those 2 or 3 days, but by the time you multiply it out, may not be accurate for the yearly average, which is what the EPA is concerned with. Mm-hmm. Because this is coming up out of the ground, it's directly related to barometric pressure. We get a day like today, foggy, low barometric pressure, we can have a lot of radon gas coming up out of the ground. We get a bright, sunny day, high barometric pressure, we may get very little. So the 2 or 3 day test, like say, they will work for those 2 or 3 days and say, yes, this was your level for those 2 or 3 days. But they could be up to 100% off on what your yearly average is. So I do recommend the 2 to 3 month test. Basically, it's a charcoal canister. You tape it up someplace, usually the lower level of the house. After the 2 or 3 months, you seal it. You mail it to a lab. They send you back a report, usually in the $30 to $35 range by the time you buy the unit and mail it off and pay the lab. So there's no good reason not to check it.
Okay. Well, you know, we're at the point here we're going to have to stop. I'm really sorry we have a couple of people we can't take because we just here up at the end of the time. Scott will be back again next month, so we'll do it at that point. People want to call your office, okay to do that?
That is, yes, we are available for answering these questions at the house. My father and I both answer the phones on a regular basis, and one of the services we do provide is to help figure out questions and figure out houses.
All right. Scott Spies is a home inspector with the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here once a month. It's always on Monday for one of these shows. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you very much, David.